try to kill us, but my village too strong. Long live the people. Here we go again with the bullshit you want. Long live the people.
We have all these mixed blood people over across the country. We cannot exclude them.
There's nothing wrong with being Red River Métis.
We are all Métis.
There was an attempt to define Métis. And we said no.
There's Métis from Red River. What's wrong with Métis from someplace else? And they were also Métis people.
Uniting our people is at a very sad state.
We are all Métis.
Welcome to the Jig Is Up. My name's Darcy. And this is the last, at least for a little while, this is the last of our special events podcast. We were part of an event tonight called Arts Dance, and I want to thank them and everybody who helped organize and all the people who went to the planning meetings and Danny and Kevin who put a lot of work into this. It was a lot of fun. I would definitely do it again. It was a blast, and I just can't thank them enough for being part of it, to allowing me to be part of it. We have three guests on the show with us. And this is the first time that the Jig Is Up is not going to be focused solely on Métis issues. We are actually going to be talking more about racism and things like that. So, but this is the three guests are Gitz Deranger, Michelle Robinson, and Stacy De Silva, and they have a wide range of viewpoints. They come from various different backgrounds, so it's a really cool conversation to have. I hope you guys enjoy it. I let them pick the topics and kind of, pick what they wanted to talk about and how they want to talk about it. So I hope you guys enjoy.
Long live the king.
All right, welcome to Jig Is Up. This is our first live event. And beside me is Stacy. And feel free to introduce yourself.
Hi, guys. My name is Stacy De Silva. My Indian name is Sunrise Eagle Woman. Sagasteo Geheo Squeo in Cree. My mom is from Northern Alberta, Sad Lake. My dad is from Boston, Massachusetts. My mom is Cree, and my dad is Portuguese, so I joke and say I'm a Porcha-Cree. I was born and raised here in Calgary. I'm registered out in Saddle Lake. I used to be a Métis, but I'm a Bill C-31 now, because the government said so. And I'm a mother of three beautiful children. Sage is 17 and graduated, and Steedon and Cedar, my little ones. So they take up a big portion of my life and my time. And I'm also an advocate and a community worker. I love developing and facilitating workshops for the community. I most recently have been doing some work with Elizabeth Fry and doing my one-woman show in the correctional facilities. And yeah, that's where my heart lies, is working with community and children and women. I'm really honored to be here. Thank you.
Awesome. Go ahead, Gitz.
My name's Gitz. I'm 33. I'm a youth worker. I grew up in Fort McMurray, ground zero of the tar sands extraction. Kind of do a lot of things. Just brought you through briefly a simulation of what it is to be colonized. What else do I say? We do a podcast. You and I do a podcast,
right,
as well.
Yep.
We have a podcast you can find on Podbean.
Yeah, on Podbean and on iTunes.
It's called Drowning in White Tears. We cover a bunch of different issues on race and racism and colonization, all that jazz. I authored a book just recently. It's called Secret of the Stars. You can find it on Amazon.ca or .com. Check it out.
Awesome.
Yeah. Was there anything else I can plug of mine?
The movie Mother.
Oh, yeah. I'm briefly in the movie Mother by Darren Aronofsky. So like, awesome. I got one line, and before things go crazy, you can see me taking apart a door. My mom asked me when I showed her, like, why are you doing that? And I'm like, I think she thought it was a commentary on her as a mother and how she raised me. She's like, couldn't you have just taken, like, a picture? I'm like, no. So, yeah, go see Mother. It's awesome. I love it. Yeah, that's me.
Okay, I guess I'm next. I'm Michelle Robinson. My Indian Act and Post status card says Yellowknife Dene, but I was born here in Calgary, and my mom is from Yellowknife, and my dad is from Yorkton, Saskatchewan. My dad's actually so white, I'm actually a daughter of the Mayflower and a daughter of the American Revolution. So it's interesting being in my world and having a foot in two worlds. I know that a lot of you just went under gets his colonial violence map work exercise, and it's a great exercise. And a lot of people wonder what's next. And back in June of last year, there was a book launch that we had done here in Calgary, and we're on like book 16 now. So I highly recommend that if you want to continue learning, that maybe you join a book club or start a book club or have a look at some of the recommended things to read. And I'm pretty proud to be one of the only public Indigenous book clubs in the city. So I hope that you can consider having a look at that and doing that. We've been very active in the arts community, the nonprofit that I'm with, and I wear lots of hats. I want to definitely plug October 4th. October 4th is the Sisters in Spirit Vigil, and that's where we honor the missing and murdered Indigenous women, girls, and Two-Spirit. And we're going to be at City Hall at noon, and we actually do a small march from Stephen Avenue starting at 11:30 if you want to join us. And then we'll have the mayor and dignitaries speak. And but most importantly, we hear from the families of missing and murdered Indigenous women. And the other thing that we do as a community is honor our residential school survivors as well as those that didn't make it. And that's coming up. Some people are going to be celebrating it on Friday, but it's actually Saturday is Orange Shirt Day. So if you do have an orange shirt, please wear it. And please talk about residential schools to people who may ask or maybe start those conversations. And those are a few things about me. And I guess the last thing I might try to plug is that I'm actually running for city council. So I really encourage everyone to vote on October 16th. Electionscalgary.ca has a website that shows everybody. But if you live in Ward 10, I'm just saying I'm running in your area. You might want to be a part of voting for the First Nation woman. So thank you.
C31. Awesome. So yeah, Michelle is actually the first First Nation woman to run for city council, so that's kind of a big deal. That's cool. So what did you guys want to talk about? I mean, there's lots of topics. We could talk about colonization, art appropriation.
Art appropriation.
Okay. Gets picked that one. Let's do it. So what? You start us off then.
I think... Oh, God. Art appropriate... People who appropriate art, like artists that don't quite understand what colonization is, they're like the worst kind of people, along with like white feminists that don't understand intersectionality or hippies in general. That's like the holy trinity of colonization right there, you know? And if you listen to how they speak, like now, artists, they carefully dance around the issue of cultural appropriation. They'll say like inspired by, when really they mean like just flat out ripping off. So you look at those, that god-awful art that's... on the west side of town. What's that thing called?
Beaufort Towers.
Yeah. Like, it's totally... It was one of those things where, like, why would they create something that looks like our old graves? And it's from some bougie dude out in New York who took that concept, bastardized it, and called it art. It's one of those things I just can't stand, and I see it all the time, you know? I don't know. Are there any other, like, forms you see of art, artists ripping us off? We get paid jack shit out of it. I guess I'm going to tell either of you. Just examples.
Well,
I mean,
you see it a lot online, especially the news breaks online. Like there was that lady that tried to do the art show in Toronto, and her art was like basically a carbon copy of many Indigenous artists, and she was inspired by. And I guess that would be my question is. Like what? The inspiration defense. Like what is inspired, and what is copying? And that seems to be a real hard thing for people to understand. So I don't know if you guys have any ideas on that, but
I can just tell you a little bit of the experiences that I've had with that. Like trying to talk to exactly who gets described, people who are in incredible positions of power, yet don't realize that they are, and take our art and put it up in a way that doesn't actually tell a story. And then what happens in the non-Indigenous world is that everyone says, oh, look, you know, we're honoring them. We're including them when we're still them. And we're not the people getting paid. We're not the people who got to be a part of the process in any way. And it's certainly not telling one of our stories. And that happens all the time, every single day. and trying to have these conversations has been very difficult. I was at an ego trust conversation yesterday, and they had the most British guy who is incredibly in denial of colonialism and his country's history. And he spoke at length how we have to use Margaret Thatcher's words in order for us to try to hit the mainstream on climate change, because we're not going to talk about colonialism, and we're not going to talk about why we're here. We're not going to talk about the rights of Indigenous people or the rights of the land or anything like that. We're just going to try to really hit those, you know, people who are center or center right, and talk to them about how maybe we can have conversations about climate change rather than just being honest about Indigenous issues and colonialism and fixing it from the root of the issue.
That's awesome. I'm sitting here and I'm like wondering, oh, what's saying too much? What's, you know, like, I have a really great example, and it's, I don't want to, sometimes I'm going to watch, be very careful about what I say and speak kindly and gently. But there was a really great project that was put on here, and it was discussing the treaties, and the project came from stories from the people of the land, the Blackfoots, and all of Treaty 7 area, where it was part of this project and building it up and everything. And there was a great man who was non-Indigenous who had this great idea about putting this project on, and he passed away. And after he passed away, the project, like, it kind of turned, and it turned because of money, and a non-Indigenous woman that was took over and kind of took over the whole project, the whole play, the whole performance art, and it just so happened that a lot of the performers dropped out. You know, they resigned because they were so upset, and every time they tried to voice their opinion of what was happening with the project, they were just shut down. And a lot of the artists spoke out about it on social media. And they wrote letters to the organizers and stuff. And I feel like some, you know, like when stuff like that happens, it discourages us a little bit, or empowers us. I mean, there's that sense of resistance and makes you want to fight to do the proper show that comes from the people. And I mean, that's what's fabulous about our people, the strength and the resilience. But I mean, it's for some of us artists that aren't connected as good in the community and have other major roles in our lives as parents and stuff like that, it's hard to feel supported and to feel like you can grow in a community that feels like some of those things, higher power and people with money can, you know, bring you down. And it's like finding the grassroots way, I guess, of going about doing some of these projects and events, I guess. Does that make sense?
I think it does. One of the things I constantly struggle with is when white people take things over, like they take things, you know. Paul Mooney, the comedian from down in America, talks about how white people take everything. So you have to be really, as people of color, you got to be careful about what you have around them, because they'll take it. And he talks about people that they've took, and they put on like a platter and they raise them up, and they're it's like they're no longer those people. It's like they're people now. When I think of that, I think of stories that they've taken, and I just watched Indian Horse. Richard Wagamese's book that came to life in a movie. It was difficult and painful to watch, because the dude who was directing was white and the producers were all white, and they had a vision and they could see things, but it wasn't through our lens. And there's the idea, like, oh, well, it's cool seeing our people being like paid and getting work and starring in a movie, and the guy is talented, but when it came to the actual trauma of the residential schools, it came like, I saw it as this, like, doing things for shock. Almost like a colonial poverty porn, where he was going to be like, oh, I'm going to do this and this and this and this. And he kept the narrative of the kid, the main character, his demons until the end. Like, he left it all out for that final shock to give you. And I remember being kind of disgusted at the end of the movie. I'm thinking, why do they think they could tell our stories? Like, these are our sacred stories. I had to leave because I was so angry. Actually, I went there with Liberty. Is she still here?
No, she left.
Oh, yeah. I went there with Liberty. Went to go check out the movie. And at the end, I just had to leave. They had a Q&A. And if I was to stay, I would have asked him if he, as a director, thought he could direct something. If he was given the script of Get Out, if he thought he could do just as good a job as Keel. Was it Keel? It was Keel. It was Keel, wasn't it? Hmm. Key and Peele? I'm pretty sure it was Keel. I was wondering if he could actually, if he thought he could do just as good a job. And the answer is he can't. Yeah. You know, because you're telling a narrative that isn't yours. And I always find they when my people get in, they get lost in whatever it is that they're in. And they try doing a better job almost immediately. And that comes down to that white consciousness, that white supremacy. So you see it with that.
Yeah, I see that for sure.
You know, and I bet you in the beginning she wasn't like that.
Yeah, like she thought she was making it better. And yeah.
No, but in the beginning, I think she might have came from a more humble place.
Yeah.
And the longer she was there, she got too familiar. And then she decided, I could do this better than anyone else can.
Hmm. It's sad. Huh?
Hmm. Does anybody have any questions that they'd like to come to the mic and ask?
Melanie does.
Well, I'd like to ask, because Michelle, you're heavily involved in politics. So when it comes to this appropriation, like we've seen, there's policies and things like that. The city of Calgary has an art policy, and all these governments have art policies and art, you know, they have committees and commissions and boards for everything. And what you never see is there's never an Indigenous lens on any of these boards, of any of these commissions. So, like, from a policy standpoint, would that set a better standard if our actual representatives and the commissions and that decide on these things actually had some Indigenous lenses?
That's a loaded question, because...
You're welcome.
Where do we even begin? Let's start with the Calgary Board of Education. We've had Indigenous people put forward their resumes, get interviewed, and then they get rejected. But the Calgary Board of Education doesn't actually have a mechanism to explain why they reject anyone, Native or non-Native. So once they've done that, they actually have First Nation, Métis, and Inuit positions that they fill with non-Indigenous. And they just feel, oh, well, we've always done it that way, so it's somehow acceptable. And I've told every school trustee it's 100% not acceptable. So you need to do two things. You need to have a policy on hiring as to why it is you reject people, because there has to be a reason. And if there's not a reason, then it's just white supremacy saying, look at a crazy bull. No, we're not hiring them over a Robinson. And that's the problem, is that white supremacy right from the start. So when we talk about these other projects, we never get hired. And there's no mechanism as to why. So if you look at the major players that are in charge of the different departments of the city of Calgary, they're almost all white, all men. There's one woman, or two women, I think, but they're white. And so we don't have an intersectional lens when looking at anything, let alone when we're talking about Indigenous art, let alone when we're talking about Indigenous inclusion, let alone the White Goose Flying Report. That was done by the Calgary Aboriginal Committee, and they had a look at the Truth and Reconciliation Commission's calls to action and put it in a report of what the city can do. But up to date, since they've released their report, we have not seen anybody implement part of that report. So to say we need somebody at the table to push it is an understatement. We need to continue that. And because it is an election, everyone here can push every mayoral candidate and every candidate that's running, as well as the CBE candidates that are all running, and push them on this and say, what are you doing for public education when it comes to Indigenous issues? Because that is one of the calls to action. That's one of the White Goose Flying Report's recommendations, and we should be implementing that. And if the people who are in charge refuse to pick up a finger and learn about Indigenous issues, we are not going to see an Indigenous lens on something like public art or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I can take the mic a lot longer, so somebody better interject here.
This may be why you're in politics.
Yeah.
I think what's dangerous is you have these people that are in power and they don't know anything about us. They don't know what we contributed to this country. They don't know what we are right now. They just have an idea of us, you know? So this lady who like ripped off this artist had no idea who the people were. The guys who came from New York to build that eyesore on the west side of town had no idea who the Blackfoot, the Tsutina, the Stony people are. No idea whatsoever. But they're going to build something and to honor us, but they have no idea who we are. And if you can't defend something, you shouldn't be talking about it. That's like, I've always felt like this. Even if you have the right idea, if you can't defend it, you still need to learn about it. These people know nothing about us, yet they decide what goes where. How much money did they spend on that eyesore? How much money?
A lot of money.
$500,000, I think.
None of that went to an Indigenous person at all. An Indigenous person in this community of Calgary, there are artists that actually could do some things with that money. I would love to have that money. I could do some things with that money. You know, it'd be great. But that went to a non-Indigenous, non-Canadian person.
One of the things I always come across when you talk about this, especially when it comes to, like, you know, local artists and stuff, is people go, well, I don't know how to get a hold of a local artist. Well, how do you find a local Indigenous artist? And, like, I think that's kind of a cop-out. I mean, there's Google.
But they know where to go to get cheap gas.
Right, yeah. You know? So, I mean, what do you even say to that? Like, well, how do you find somebody to, you know, where are the local Indigenous artists? Like, I don't even know how to answer that, really. It's like, that's just the dumbest thing I've ever heard. But that's the answer you get.
How do you find somebody in, like, New York
right?
to come build something? Yeah. Like, how do you go across the continent into another country to find somebody to bring here to build this? But you can't just drive to the edge of town in Soutina, go to the band office, and go to, like, the place where you get cheap gas and smokes and fireworks and see the gift store that's connected to it. The one that you've probably bought, like, a purse or something for somebody and not ask, you know?
They were honoring.
I don't know. I just like laziness. I always see it's just laziness and a cop-out.
No.
No?
I think, you know, Stacy, she's one of the artists. And I don't know how many times I have to say, well, do you know Stacy? Do you know this person? Do you know this person? And I don't know if people just not pay attention. I mean, if you were to Google, you know, Indigenous Treaty 7, like, all of our people show up. So I don't understand. I don't understand why people don't know what the Indian Act is. I don't understand why people don't know why we still live under it. Like, to me, this is like, hey, the sky is blue, the grass is green, we're still breathing. But, you know, the conversations I have with people are so far spread sometimes. And So it's really frustrating when I get asked those questions. I had a cyclist right here. I said, hey, why don't you come eat with us? And he's like, well, you know, you guys just need to accept Jesus into your heart. And then that reconciliation starts here. And I'm like, so, you know, what about the legislative barriers, anything like that? He's like, oh, no. That all starts here. So we're just having such different conversations with people. And please, somebody, come to the mic, ask a question, because if not, you're going to hear my voice and I'm going to bore you, I promise.
I just want to speak to you. You're talking about Michelle. Sure. Thanks so much. I love you. You always give me such good props. How I guess people don't know how to get a hold of you. We end up taking on other jobs because there's so much other work in all these other areas. I guess I grew up in Calgary and then I moved away to Vancouver and I took some theater training. And then I moved back because I used to hear everybody talking about, oh, you know, everybody goes and gets training and then they move away and nobody stays and helps their people and build it here. So I moved back, and when I came back, like, the one theater company that was Crazy Horse Theater Company was running before I had moved. When I came back, it wasn't here anymore and there was no central place. There was no place for artists to go. They're like Aboriginal artists and Indigenous artists. You know, and feel for myself, I guess, part of the community. Again, it was easy in the beginning growing up with it because I guess being an urban Indian, I had all multicultural, all kinds of friends, you know. But going back to, I guess, some deeper rooted issues around artists and kind of as for myself when I look at colonization and the trauma of residential school and how it has trickled down in my family because my grandmother is a residential school survivor and my parents had a really rough upbringing and they were to be independent very young, so they had jobs at 13, 14 and were living on their own at 13, 14, very independent and very strong. And my mom sheltered me a lot. She didn't tell me about the history as I was growing up. She always used to tell me, like, oh, learn about it, you know, you learn about it in college, you know, ask your social teacher. And I remember being in one of my social teacher classes and just asking him because I really wanted to learn more and more. And I was like, this can't be right. Like, I experienced totally different stuff. What is he talking about? And can you tell me more, like the other story? And he would just sit there and he would write as far as his arm could go, as high as he could. He never got off of his chair. And he would just, and he told me, oh, you can learn about it in college when you go to university, if you go. And I was just like, okay. So I took it when I went to university and I learned all about it. And then I did good and I was following my career and my path and everything. And then as I started like taking these classes and I started paying attention, you know, like, are people treating me that way because I'm Indigenous? Like, I think I was just so naive before that. Before I learned about it, that I just thought people were just rude. But then I started realizing this is happening because I'm Indigenous. And then it just was like on. I start my kids. There's this big cycle when we talk about colonization and the child welfare system, and domestic violence and all these kinds of things that can come into a person's life that has been through the traumas of residential school that trickle down through the family. But it's something when these things happen to you, and as an artist, it's a challenge to work through those traumas. You know, it's like people. I'm getting totally. Am I going on a tangent here?
No, keep going.
Okay, so then, like as you go through these traumas and stuff, so then I secluded myself to, I guess maybe protect my children, and got a little fearful of being in the community and have and speaking my truth and not being judged and not being, I guess, asked some of those deeper questions and those, you know, it's the work that I wanted to once do, like with film and everything and being an actor on a big TV screen and stuff. It changed largely after I went through those traumas and stuff to more community-based work where I wanted to help families and I wanted to help them with my art as an artist to teach them how to tell their story, to be empowered by the challenges that they face, and so that I could share my challenges with my stories and in some way create some change, some understanding, some forgiveness, some opening our hearts and going to spirituality. And so I don't know, I think if there was a hub, if there was like an artist hub, and again, that's money and that's government and that's them colonizing us again, separating us. Let's not give them a place to meet, you know, like let them deal with their things in their little communities, if that makes sense, I hope.
Makes sense to me. I mean, to this day, if I go light a smudge anywhere in a public building, then they're absolutely going to call the fire department and probably arrest me and all sorts of stuff. So, like,
or if we go to door with our smudge.
Yeah, I know. People don't like that. That's for sure.
So we got the sign to wrap up. So I don't know if you guys have one last comment you want to make about.
Yeah, I got one.
If
you want to see like systemic oppression that still perpetuates racist ideals, and cementing that into the minds of youth and everybody, just like go across the river over there to Fort Calgary, and you'll see all these racist exhibits. They have a new good. They have a guy that's working there. Really, his name is Troy Patnaud. He's great. He's trying to revamp everything. It's a celebration of white success over there at the Fort Calgary. Everything else has been erased, but it's really just holding up white people. Even though you can go to the, you know, right now you can go to the museum and see the Kent Monkman exhibit. Beyond that, so there's a surface thing of like a white structure doing good things and thinking, oh, we're helping the people. Beneath that, the actual like thing holding people down is there's not one Indigenous person that works there full time. So there's not one Indigenous person who holds knowledge. The one lady that did say something, Sable Sweetgrass, they didn't renew her contract. You know, she brought this up and they're like, yeah, she's gone. They haven't, even though they hold like these items, they haven't adopted the United Nations Declaration on Indigenous Peoples. There's still this system that oppresses Indigenous folks. It's still going on. Just cross the river and go up the street. You know, you can still see these things. Yeah, they're doing stuff that's great on the outside, doing nothing for us, though, like to make an actual systemic change. I'm done.
Okay. I'm going to say this about nonprofit, because I see it all the time where progressive people with a smile say the most racist thing, but because Indigenous need a job, they just smile and nod and put up with it and continue being oppressed. It's bottom line. So we really do need to start having mechanisms where people can voice what they have to say and us not be judged for it, but rather we actually have, you know, diversity training, Indigenous training, and a lot of other things that people just always want to fight on and say, oh no, we're just one human. That's my rant.
Cool.
I just want to say thank you for the time and the space and understanding.
Absolutely. So thanks for listening. If you guys want to check it out, it'll be on the podcast probably later tonight on iTunes. It's called The Jig Is Up. So check it out there, and then check out Gitz's podcast,
Drowning in White Tears.
Yeah, which we do pretty much, well, sort of every Sunday.
Almost every Sunday.
Yeah, that's right.
We did three episodes so far. We did White Out. We had a white person on the third episode. I asked them all questions about being white, get a white perspective on things.
Yeah, it was very good.
It was cool. The second episode was
Oreos,
bananas, and apples. So being of color on the outside and white on the inside, and what that means to different nationalities and ethnicities. Yep. And the first one was talking with Tito Ibarra about
white people.
White people. White people are always late to the party.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so check those out. Right. And like I said, our podcast is focusing on Métis issues, so if you know any Métis people out there, get them to listen. And thanks.
Thanks for having us.
Long live the king.
Hey, guys. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. Like I said, it was a total blast doing a live event, and definitely would love to do more of those. If you hear of an event going on in your area in Alberta that we can get to, let us know. Shoot us an email at metipodcast@gmail.com, and let us know. I want to thank my guests, Michelle, Gitz, Stacy, for being on the show. They were a lot of fun to talk to and a lot of fun to hang out with for a couple hours tonight. Our next podcast will be next week, where me and Jason get back to the political rantings, and I'm sure there's going to be a lot to talk about, so look forward to that. And for now, guys, that's it. The jig is up.
Long live the king.
Hey, my late cooking came from Kawaka to Express. Real warrior woman, probably popping moves dead. It's poor man's if you want to talk the language. 100 clicks north and Varginha is the rest. You still gotta be a chief to wear a headdress. So take your shit off before you ruin it for the rest. You better listen to your heart, there's too many heads. And watch what you say, man, there's way too many feds.